Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this right here is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. We're finally here, everyone, at least in one part of our journey at the Year in Review MMA Series Part 4. Right now, October, November, December, myself and Paul Fontaine talking about everything that happened in the world of MMA over that 90-plus day stretch. Again, champions, falling champion, a lot of champions retaining, actually. A lot of fun events, UFC on a roll, finishing the year strong. So we talk about that. We also talk about some things at the very end for what we're looking forward to news-wise in the year ahead in 2022, which has officially started as you're listening to this. So without further ado, let's get right to it and finish off this series strong, shall we? October, November, December, in the world of MMA, myself and Paul Fontaine. Let's do that right now. Well, the beginning of the end is finally here after we started the series in late November, I think, last year, years ago, right? We are here at the part four of the granddaddy of them all, the MMA Year in Review series that started this whole thing. So we have this coming on, be released Monday, I believe. And then on Tuesday, I'll finish up the Pro Wrestling Year in Review series in December, and we'll be all done with 2021. We'll be in the books, and joining me as always is Paul Fontaine, helped me walk through the final 3 months of 2021 in MMA, and I wish you Happy New Year before, but I officially do it for all the listeners, Paul. Happy New Year, and hope they had a great Christmas.
Happy New Year to you too as well. Yeah, I had, it was a good Christmas. It was a Happy New Year, very quiet, but you know, that's kind of the way I like it. So I didn't have to work, but I still got a lot done. And it was fun. Got to see all the family that I needed to see. And it's all good.
Yeah, nice. Same here. Yeah, very quiet New Year's Eve. We saw a couple. We had part of our plans dashed due to COVID. We were supposed to go hang out with some friends of ours and their kids. Long story short, the time my wife and I met was this couple. And our kids friends and all this stuff. And they got the Rona, and so we had to cancel those plans out. Luckily, they're, you know, fine. I think as most people seem to be with Omicron in terms of like health wise and all that stuff, and so they're good. But yeah, we saw some other friends just for a couple hours in the afternoon, and yeah, my wife was in bed by like 10, and then I think I was in bed by like 11:30, quarter. At that point, I was like, why am I still up? You know what I mean? It's just kind of like I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm, you know, 40, 43, so not exactly roaring 20s when, you know, you're just like, let's do stuff all night. It's like, now I'm going to bed because I get stuff I could do tomorrow.
I think this is the first year that my wife didn't stay up till midnight since we've been together. And she hates it. Like, she just does not want to stay up till midnight, but she always does it to humor me.
Yeah.
And this year it was just like, I said, you know what? Like, go to bed. Like, it's fine. We're 50.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to stay up. Our daughter went to bed. I stayed up and I played some video games. I watched the train wreck, Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, you're a big fan of that. Pete Davidson. Yeah.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. It was so bad. It was good and bad. Like, the singing was good, but it was just all over the place production wise. Miley's boob fell out. It was wonderful. we watched Red Notice like before that. And that was fun. I mean, if for people that haven't seen it, it's a cross between Raiders of the Lost Ark and Ocean's 11. And so, I mean, that's right in our wheelhouse. We loved it.
Yeah.
And then we watched Death to 2021, which was hilarious, both on Netflix.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard of Death of 2021.
It's great. It's like just over an hour. It's just mocks everything that happened in the year. It is nonpartisan, makes fun of both sides equally. It was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought Red Notice was pretty entertaining. It wasn't like, I wouldn't call it great, but I think a lot of people have said this before, and I'm interested what your take would be that action movie, like the action movies that we saw when we were kids, like in the 90s and like, you know, the Steven Seagal, Van Damme movies, those type of things. Because, you know, how movies work now in terms of theaters has changed so much. Those movies are perfect for like streaming services. And that's definitely what Red Notice to me was.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I can't wait. Like, look like they're setting up a sequel, and we'll watch it the day it comes out. Probably this one we waited 2 months, but yeah, it was so good.
Have you seen Extraction on Netflix?
I don't think so. But oh, I'll write
my
it down.
God. Oh, my God. It is with it's with Chris Hemsworth. It's one of the best action movies I've seen on Netflix. Actually, it's my favorite one.
I think my wife is sold on Chris Hemsworth.
So. Oh, perfect. So is mine. That was
Denzel.
It, yeah. I would say anyone that has not seen Extraction, it's really good. I'll just say really, okay. Really good.
Yeah, yeah. We'll definitely check that out next time we have a movie night.
So speaking of action, let's flip to actually, before we flip to October, Tom, I always am mindful of things we may have forgot. And one of these things I can't believe forgot. One, I think I'd mentioned in the close of one of the previous episodes we did that Errol Helwani, I believe this was June, announced he was leaving ESPN to basically work for about 28 different places in BT Sport. Yeah. Going back to MMA Fighting, do the MMA Hour. He's doing his own thing on Substack and so on. And then I can't believe I forgot this. Filthy Tom Lawlor. Retired. Yeah. And I believe this was June or July. I didn't write the date down, of course, but yeah, this course of year, he had won this, his last PFL fight. And he was about to, I believe he was in a playoff contention for PFL and was just kind of after the fight. He's like, or maybe a couple days after, actually it may have been that night.
He hung up. Yeah. He put the gloves down in the ring. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is I talked to him beforehand and had a pretty good idea that this is what he was going to be doing. Cause he wasn't really happy with PFL anyways, but, and then like, I guess if he would have made the playoffs, he would have kept going and there was a slim chance he could make it. Like, I guess if he would have got a first round finish, he would have made it. And he went for it. He didn't quite get it. And, and I imagine we'll get to this at the end, maybe not. I don't know how big of a news item it was, but the guy he beat, like, just passed away.
Oh, which no is, kidding.
Yeah, Jordan Young. Hmm. I haven't really talked to him about that either, wondering how that must be weird. But he's actually talking about coming back. Like, I don't know if he's joking, but I guess if he gets an offer, I'm sure he'd think about it, especially if it was like a place like Ryzen or something, or one of those things. But he's doing pretty well in pro wrestling, so personally, yeah. For me, I kind of hope he sticks to that because I hate watching, people we like get punched in the face.
Brian Alvarez might be a exception to that rule. But there you go. Yeah. So what do we always know? The fighters never retire. They just take sabbaticals. That's pretty much it. But let's kick off then October. And probably the biggest news of the month was Glover Teixeira turning back time, UFC 267. Yeah. A free show, so to speak, on ESPN Plus. They were talking about this eventually. This was, I think, originally tapped for ABC, but timing didn't work or what have you, or I'm not really sure what the end problem was. But UFC 267 airing for free on ESPN Plus, a numbered event, first time in a lot of years that actually happened. And Glover Teixeira, again, turn back time, submitting Jan Blachowicz to win the light heavyweight championship. Really nice late career run for, I believe, 43 years old, 43, 44, something like that. And yeah, he looked great in this fight. He looked great in the run up to it, and kind of in the post John Jones era, Glover Teixeira, yeah, becoming the latest new light heavyweight champion, defeating Jan Blachowicz. Peter Yan, co-main event, won the 135-pound interim bantamweight title in a unanimous decision win over Corey Sandhagen. Of course, he awaiting his eventual fight with linear champion, I'm going to call it undisputed champion, even though there is a little bit of a dispute. And Aljamain Sterling, hopefully we'll see that at some point in 2022. Kamzat Chimaev, in his return, ran through Yi Jing Lang. And then Islam Makhachev submitting Dan Hooker and setting himself up for a main event later in the year, which we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, UFC 267, this was in the main event, we've talked about these feel-good moments throughout the year, and definitely one of the feel-good moments of the year, Glover Teixeira winning the title.
Yeah, I don't know who saw that coming. I mean, maybe by the time we got to the fight, I mean, it was definitely a possibility. But if you'd asked me at the start of 2021, who would win? And in fact, I was on a show where we made some predictions and, who's going to be the champion in each weight class. And I don't think anybody picked Glover Teixeira, which, is incredible. Like, he deserved it. He had a great run to get there, beat a bigger guy, which is, always a fun story. Just one of the nicest guys in MMA, and everyone loves this guy, and to see him get a title on the other side of 40, was pretty incredible moment. You know, and then we got the return of Khamzat Chimaev, who, you know, we've talked about quite a lot on this series of shows. You know, he got COVID, he retired at one point, he had the fights with Leon Edwards that were supposed to happen that, you know, honestly, probably in retrospect, you know, maybe it was a good idea they didn't happen, because, you know, I'm not sure he's beating Leon Edwards. And you know, he couldn't have looked better against Jing Liang Li. And now he's, you know, right back to being one of the most top prospects in all of MMA. So that was cool. This actually, UFC 267, I just looked it up, and I believe it's the first numbered pay-per-view to air on free TV since UFC 138 in 2011.
Was that the Henderson?
No. I think that was earlier. This was Mark Munoz and Chris Lieben, which, I mean, yes. That right there tells you why it wasn't on pay-per-view.
Yeah, because I think that the main event fell through, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was the first actual non-title five-round fight in the history of UFC. So, it was on Spike TV. This show, actually, it was only in the States that it was free. We had to pay for it in Canada, which kind of pissed me off.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was 2 weeks in a row we had to pay for a pay-per-view. But, I mean, you know, it was a pay-per-view worthy card. You know, we had two title fights. We had, you know, Khamzat. You know, I had no problem paying for it. It was just the idea. And there were six fight main cards, so that made it even bigger. But, yeah, I mean, it was a good show. And it kicked off, you know, what you know, when we were doing our year in review show on Fight Game Media, like, we called this the best three card stretch in UFC history. You know, between that and then the next week having UFC 268, and then the next week having what you called UFC 269, UFC Fight Night Holloway and Rodriguez.
Oh, look at that.
I can't let you forget that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It was a fight night. You know, but I mean, you know, three great, great cards in a row. I mean, we'll talk about the next two in the next section, but they just had so many great shows this year, and this was one of them. And you know, it's funny, like, a lot of times when, as we're going through these, we're like, oh, I can't believe that happened this year. I can't, you know, and this one almost feels like it was like just a couple weeks ago. And, mm-hmm. It, you know, we're already like, you know, over 3 months ago now. And, it's funny that, you know, like, there hasn't been that many shows since then, because we've had a few weeks off now. So,
yeah.
This was a great, great show, and I loved it. And yeah, Makhachev, Islam Makhachev continues. He's kind of Khabib Jr., working his way up the lightweight ranks. And he's a guy that really nobody wants to fight, because, you know, you don't really have much of a chance of winning. And he doesn't really have a super huge name yet outside of hardcore fans. So I think his 2022 is going to be really interesting. And I see him probably fighting for a title by the end of the year.
Yeah, I think they're still kind of trying to figure out who's going to be next for Glover. It's interesting, you know, when someone like such a dominant figure in the division like Jones retires, and then all of a sudden we're here to these divisions kind of just open up, and there's more, a little bit more fluidity to them. And I can see arguments on, you know, on both perspectives of, you have the dominant champion, and it's fun, the dominant team in sports, whatever you want to say there. And then you have, you know, when they're gone, it opens it up for some different faces to kind of emerge. And I think out of the post Jones era, I'm all in on seeing kind of how Glover does. I think it's one of these divisions now that anyone can win at any time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, having Teixeira's light heavyweight champion, you could do a lot worse, I think.
Kind of reminds me of when GSP retired and the welterweight division was kind of in flux for a little while.
Yep. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go over the first chunk of the other headlines and happenings and events and main results from the first half of the month. Paige VanZant, her bare knuckle career, Paul, was up in the air after starting 0-2. Big surprise there. UFC Vegas 38, Thiago Santos, speaking of light heavyweights, edging out Johnny Walker in the main event. Kyle Daukaus picked up a win over Kevin Holland after it was over. That happened via overturned on replay, which is something that we didn't see that often due to a headbutt, nope. I believe. And yeah, very, very rare. Aspen Ladd missed weight again, another scary way. And she's shaking on the scales and just not good. Not good. So her fight once again with Macy Chiasson was canceled. That fight was canceled earlier in the year due to a injury by Macy and what have you. But yeah. So then Kevin Holland later stopped a car thief with a coffee cup and a scarf choke, according to him. Bellator's 267 results. MVP returning, defeating Douglas Lima by split decision, setting himself up for, I think what many people assume, be a welterweight title match at some point in 2022. Thomas Almeida was cut by the UFC. I include this because, yeah, at one point he was a big prospect for UFC, and he even main evented against your guy, Cody Garbrandt, in a UFC fight night, I believe in Memorial Day in like maybe 2018, sounds about right, something like that. But but I remember he was kind of made to be a big deal and just never had some wins, but just never was able to really get going, kind of fulfill that promise. BJ Penn said now he was going to be running for governor of Hawaii. Francis Ngannou versus Ciryl Gane, a heavyweight title unifier targeted for UFC 270. Patricio Pitbull vacated the Bellator lightweight title, rather, and his brother Patricky was going to just fight for it next. Kind of an unusual situation there. Chris Cyborg defending her 145-pound title in Bellator against Sinead Kavanaugh next. Junior Dos Santos made his pro wrestling debut for AEW. Calvin Kattar versus Giga Chikadze was targeted for a future main event date. I don't think that's been officially announced as of yet. UFC Vegas 39, Marina Rodriguez defeated Mackenzie Dern in the main event by unanimous decision. Luis Pena, former violent Bob Ross, charges battery and domestic violence after allegedly punching his girlfriend in the face, and he was finally cut by UFC. Chuck Liddell was charged with domestic violence, but I say it's not what you think. The reason for that, I think many people saw the headline initially and kind of assumed the worst, but he and his wife were having a fight, and his wife apparently has some mental issues, and when there's a call for domestic violence from the police where he lives, that somebody has to be arrested, and he volunteered to be arrested so his wife didn't have to be. He then filed for divorce, and the charges against him were later dropped. Going back to the future, Joe Riggs defeated Melvin Gillard in 59 seconds in a bare knuckle fight in Montana. Again, these guys just cannot go away, and just bad stuff there. Jorge Masvidal versus Leon Edwards was tabbed for UFC 269. Luke Rockhold was out of his UFC 268 fight and is his return against Sean Strickland due to injury. And then Brandon Moreno versus Deiveson Figueiredo 3 was pushed back to UFC 270. And Sean Shelby reportedly, according to Dana White, stormed out after he signed a Contender Series fighter that apparently he didn't want. Who knows how much truth there is to that. Thoughts about any of that?
So I'm sure people that were listening to you do that rundown probably screaming at you at their listening device about the Calvin Kattar, Giga Chikadze.
now they're screaming at you, Paul.
It's actually the main event of the first show in 2022.
Oh, okay.
Next weekend.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
Been looking forward to that one since it was announced. So I didn't know about the BJ Penn thing. That was kind of funny. You might have heard me chuckle while you were going through that. I assume he didn't win. I think if BJ Penn was the governor of Hawaii, I'd probably know about it. JDS in pro wrestling, I don't think anybody saw that coming. He's not at all Kane, were two guys that when they were having their run, like, I don't think anybody thought either one of them would be, in pro wrestling at any point in their lives. And they're both, seemed pretty good at it. JDS seemed to love it. I always thought he looked like Randy Orton, but other than that, like, I didn't really see him, his personality really being a good suit for pro wrestling, but he did a really good job in that. The Minneapolis street fight at, whatever that pay-per-view was, Full Gear.
Yeah.
And Paige VanZant, I mean, the only person that got me to pony up money for bare knuckle fighting, and looks like she's probably done. You hear that she's maybe going to get back into Bellator or possibly pro wrestling. Who knows? I think either one of those is probably better for her long-term prospects than getting punched in the face and bloodied up, because that's her moneymaker.
Exactly.
I don't really want to get too much into like stuff like Luis Pena and Chuck Liddell. I mean, those stories kind of speak for themselves. The Riggs Gillard thing is always interesting. Whenever I see that name, Gillard, he was in the first fight I ever saw live, like in person, on a UFC show. I was on the undercard of I'm drawing a blank here. Rampage and Sugar, Rashad Evans. He was in one of the early fights. And when I walked into the arena, I saw the guy and I had no idea who he was, because that was a pretty Not a hardcore fan at all. And so, yeah, I saw this guy that kind of looked like Shelton Benjamin to me, and I was kind of interested. And I was a little bit of a fan because he was in the first fight I ever saw live. So, But I don't like to see him fighting Joe Riggs in a bare knuckle fighting championship. That's not even like the quote unquote bare knuckle fighting. This is right. Like a regional bare knuckle fighting.
Yeah, with Melvin Gillard, I always think of him because when I hosted this this MMA show for ESPN New Hampshire back in years and years and years ago, more than 10 years ago now, he was a guest and he was on a golf course while we were interviewing him. And I mean, you just couldn't hear anything he said. And finally, we're like, okay, we're good.
Was that on one of the ones that you replayed when you were? Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
Because I like those shows. You should bring those back.
Yeah, I think I have about 15 of those left or so. Yeah, I keep thinking about that. Yeah, I think it's a, yeah. Actually, you know what, Paul? I'm going to take a note right now to write ESPN MMA show. And then that means it will be done some point this
Especially
year.
Especially now. It's like opening a time, what do they call them? The
time capsule.
Time capsule, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Let's go to the rest of some of these items, some of which I would never hope to find in a time capsule. John Jones, the fallout from the Vegas situation. He was banned from the Jackson Wink gym following issues, and he would eventually land, I believe, in a spinoff gym at them, and things would turn a little bit ugly there, as they always do with John Jones. UFC Vegas 40 results. Aspen Ladd, we just talked about her missing weight. She stepped in on short notice to fight Norma Dumont, stepping in for Holly Holm, who was out and injured, fighting Norma Dumont in the UFC main event. Dumont won a pretty boring decision by unanimous decision, rather, and Jim Miller picked up a knockout on the undercard. Jim Miller, another one of these fighters that just keeps on going no matter what. He's going to be around forever. Just keeps picking up wins.
Yep.
And did so again on this one. Bellator 268 results. Both Corey Anderson and light heavyweight champion Vadim Nemkov won by stoppage. Anderson knocking out Ryan Bader very impressively. And Nemkov being Julius Angelicus or something along those lines. He was a short notice replacement. And they were both set for the light heavyweight final. And Corey Anderson having a nice run in Bellator. Conor McGregor accused of punching an Italian DJ. There was some talk about United States vaccination policies affecting international fighters being able to come in and out of the country. Bellator 272, a Sergio Pettis versus Coyote Horiguchi bantamweight title fight was booked. Vegas 41 results for the UFC. This was an interesting situation, as it always is with Paulo Costa. Marvin Vettori defeating Paulo Costa in the main event by decision. Pretty entertaining fight. It was supposed to be at 185. Then it was 195. And then it was made 205 pounds. And just another mess by Costa. Dana White said Costa's done at 185. And Costa saying he still wants another chance at it. Good luck with all that. Bellator 269. Fedor Emelianenko returning. Bellator show in Russia, knocking out Tim Johnson. So I guess we saw why Tim Johnson was booked for that spot instead of Josh Barnett or Hager or any of these other Bellator heavyweights. Dana White saying as his various press conferences throughout the month that Nate Diaz has one fight left on his contract. Just put a little asterisk in that for a little bit later in our conversation. Cale Harrison should stay in PFL and get quote-unquote obscene money for avoiding the best. That's what he decided to throw out there. Mike Perry signed with Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship in a perfect, perfect marriage of fighter and organization. Yep. Israel Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker 2 was moved to UFC 271. PFL, again, Kayla Harrison rolling to victory once again, winning $1 million. Clarissa Shields lost in her second fight. Ray Cooper, the third, picked up a victory and another $1 million. Kind of one of these unheralded fighters that just keeps on winning outside the UFC and making a ton of money doing it. Bruce Buffer missed his first UFC numbered event in 25 years due to having coronavirus. Wow. And Joanna Jędrzejczyk said she wanted more money or a quote unquote a bigger slice of the cake in order to return to UFC. Thoughts about any of that?
When I saw your notes here, you said JJ wants more money to return to UFC. And I assumed you were talking about John Jones, which is would also be true. I didn't even know the Bruce Buffer thing. Like, I guess I probably noticed that it was Joe Martinez doing the play by, you know, the ring announcing there, but I didn't realize it was due to COVID. I don't know how that kind of slipped my radar. Mm. Dana, you know, hashtag Dana says a lot of things talking about Kayla Harrison staying in PFL. And then next thing you know, she's at cage side on a UFC show, which there's no way she bought a ticket for that. So clearly they're courting her. We talked about the Bellator, you know, Fedor, you know, when that was announced, like just how ludicrous that matchmaking was. And I'm actually surprised that it went well for Bellator, because I fully expected Tim Johnson to wax Fedor, but that didn't happen. So, you know, and Tim Johnson's like actually one of their top heavyweights. So it kind of tells you how bad their heavyweight division is if Fedor is beating one of their top guys. Not much else here. Jim Miller, you talked about him. After he won, I think he's, you know, his goal is to fight on UFC 300, which I think would be 2024. So just a little over 2 years from now. And, that, you know, that would mean he'd have fought on 100, 200 and 300, which would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I think if he's still active, it's a no brainer to try to get him on that card. Other than that, not a ton there. The vax policy thing, I guess, was interesting, but that's, you know, kind of all sports and it's always constantly in flux. Like right now, I know UFC was planning on coming to Canada, but there's no way that's happening until something changes, because, you're not getting around. Like if anybody catches COVID, like you're not getting out of this country for 14 days and, you don't want to take that chance. So that's why WWE has pulled all their house shows, you know, regardless of what they're saying. Like, that's why.
I'd gladly stay in Canada for 14 days. I love that country.
Oh, I'd like to get out of here. I've been we'll stuck switch. Here for almost 2 years. Yeah. I went to the States. I went to Minneapolis in September, but that was just for a couple days for a daughter's medical appointment. We're going back in March, but yeah. I'd like to go for a holiday. But yeah, it's a pretty good place to have to stay. I agree. Exactly. Although it's really cold.
Yes. Very true. Very true. Let's go to November. And this, if you notice by the notes, this was probably the least newsworthy month of the whole year. It's Thanksgiving or things like that. Just wasn't a lot in terms of like big news or anything like that. But probably the biggest was UFC returning to Madison Square Garden for UFC 268. Did great numbers on pay-per-view, around 700,000 purchases on ESPN Plus. And in the main event, Kamaru Usman. This is a show of rematches here. Kamaru Usman defeating Colby Covington in their rematch, retaining the welterweight title. Really fun fight near the end, especially. Covington had a nice little comeback there and made things interesting. The opening fight of the pay-per-view, Justin Gaethje defeating Michael Chandler in a wild fight, match of the year candidate for sure. Alex Pereira, we talked about him on a previous episode, a former Glory two-time champion. And the last person to knock out Israel Adesanya, made his UFC debut, kind of a blah first round, was getting wrestled to death, and then hit this beautiful jumping knee knockout in the second and erased all the memory of the first round pretty quickly. So some interesting things for him, I think, in 22. But this is a fun card overall. Bobby Green stopping Ally Quinta, who would later retire in the month. Chito Vera knocking out Frankie Edgar on the main card, the images of which were people have seen will never forget, because he looked like a claymation character is the best way to describe it. Rose Namajunas retaining her strawweight title in a split decision win over Weili Zhang. And let's see, in the back, of course, there's some stuff in the back as well. Francis Ngannou walking into the arena, and UFC cameras happen to catch this, and he basically just walks by future opponent Ciryl Gane, didn't even acknowledge him, and that's kind of a meme or a gif that made its way around quite a bit. And then Michael Chandler and Conor McGregor agreed to fight in 2022 after this one, of course, and Conor McGregor throughout this entire stretch is trying to fight anybody and not really fight anybody and get in the mix, everything like this. But overall, I mean, this show 268 was another kind of one of these great, you know, top five cards of the year for sure to me. This was just fun. There was fun stuff on the prelims, main card paid off. And it was just interesting stuff as we go into, setting some interesting stuff up as we go into 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. The show did, like you said, 700,000 buys. They did, I think, the fourth biggest gate in Madison Square Garden history. Like, that's not just UFC. That's any combat sporting, pro wrestling, anything. So, you know, a lot of interest in UFC. I think I made the point in maybe a year in article or something I wrote that, you know, this kind of goes under the radar a little bit. UFC did not have an unsold ticket for a pay-per-view event in 2022. You know, that's kind of just speaks to how hot they are, at least as a live event property. And probably the fact that they're not doing the small shows is probably building up the anticipation for when you actually can get a ticket to a UFC show. So, you know, and I think that's going to continue into 2022 with some of the shows they have lined up. They try to put two title fights on every pay-per-view. or a premium live event. I think that's the terminology we're using now, right? That's what the kids say. This was, like you said, a great show. The Gaethje Chandler, I think, is most people's pick for fight of the year. And you didn't even mention it here, but the fight that immediately followed it was Shane Burgos and Billy Quarantillo.
Oh, yeah.
Was a great fight as well. Like, really, like, I've made the point that if Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler had had the exact fight as those two guys did, people would think of it as being even better. But the fact is, you know, it's Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler. So that just adds something to it, and your anticipation and your, you know, just being invested in it. Whereas, you know, you watch these other two guys who you maybe don't know having a great fight, and they got the crowd into it, which was incredible, because after that opener, and this was the opener as well, which was an interesting strategy by UFC and ESPN to open, because usually that would have been, you know, third from the top, mm-hmm. but they wanted to open super hot, and it worked out really well for them. The Rose and Zhaili Wang, that was interesting with the split decision because of the way the rounds went. I mean, it was a very, very close fight. I thought Rose, you know, pretty clearly won, but the reactions on Twitter were kind of split, and there was a lot of calls of, you know, people like, if you went for Rose, it meant you were like racist. And if you went for Zhaili, you're a communist. Like, I mean, it was, you know, they just very back and forth.
Yeah.
The crowd was just chanting like awful stuff during this fight. I just thought it was kind of disgusting. I mean, it was probably a lot of Colby Covington fans there, and they were pretty rude in the main event as well, you know, in some of their chants. Like, he had his fans there. The last thing you mentioned there, Chandler and Conor McGregor, you know, you hear about all these different fights that people, you know, come up with for Conor. This one to me makes so much sense because either guy wins, you can easily make a case for them getting a title shot off of it, you know, but they're both kind of in a similar position where they're coming off of losses. So, you know, like, but a win in a big high profile fight like that just kind of vaults them right back into contention. And you know, it's going to be a great fight. You know, the guys are going to cut great promos leading up to it. And it's a non-title fight that could headline a pay-per-view. I think they'd be crazy not to make that fight.
Yep. So that means they probably won't. We'll see.
Right. If they do the Nate or Nick, for Chandler, I mean, that's going to make a lot of money too. So they can't lose if they just book Connor.
Yep, exactly. And we'll talk more about Nate's future in just a minute. So let's go to the rest of the month again. Not a ton here. A lot of results, but, you know, kind of just some other stuff. Dana White said he was 100% interested in Khamzat Chimaev versus Nate Diaz. Big surprise there. JDS signed a boxing management deal, Junior Dos Santos, of course, and he called out some of the top heavyweights. Don't think any of those fights would probably turn out too well for him. Roxanne Modafferi, a longtime MMA fighter, kind of a women's pioneer. Now she was going to be retiring after her next UFC fight. Bellator 270, Patricky Pitbull stopped Peter Queeley via TKO to win the 155-pound title. Edwards versus Masvidal was off UFC 269, and Nick Diaz offered to take the spot. That would not happen. Dana White claimed that the UFC 268 undercard fighter took home $750,000. So that was this fighter pay thing was just a thing throughout the entire course of the year. And so he just threw out kind of things like that. And I assume that would probably be maybe Alex Pereira or someone like that. But who knows? He didn't really, I don't know if he even identified the guy. Bellator 271, Cyborg Santos knocking out Sinead Kavanaugh in 92 seconds to retain her featherweight title without barely breaking a sweat. UFC Vegas 42, not UFC 269 or whatever I called it. Max Holloway picking up a unanimous decision victory over Yair Rodriguez in a fun fight. Andrea Lee defeated Cynthia Calvillo, a short-nosed opponent for Lee. And there was talk about the Volkanovski trilogy fight up next for Max Holloway. I don't know if I really need to see that right now, but we'll get your thoughts in a minute, Paul. Magomed Ankalaev versus Thiago Santos, tapped for a March main event. As I mentioned, Ally Kinta retired. UFC Vegas 43 results. Caitlin Vieira picked up a unanimous decision win over Misha Tate. Sean Brady picking up a unanimous decision win over Michael Chiesa. There were talks between John Jones and Jake Hager about having a grappling match, which Jones said was signed. Hager says wasn't. I don't think we still have any clarification yet as to where things are with that. Diego Sanchez had a really tough battle with COVID-19. There was still talk about him coming to Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, potentially against Mike Perry. Think about that for a minute. And
dream fight.
Yeah, dream fight. Yeah, exactly. For the sadistic, for sure. And then Sanchez also revealed he was not vaccinated and dealt with all types of issues and things like that. Just really, really dumb. I include this in here because it's just one of the things I never even thought about. Rampage Jackson said he was leaving MMA. I think he kind of had already. Of course, interested in boxing. He wants that Triller money. He was at the Triller Triad fight, which event I'm going to get to in a second. And he doesn't want a UFC Hall of Fame induction. He just wants a check from them instead. Islam Makhachev, we just talked about him a minute ago, versus Benil Dariush, was tabbed for a February main event. And at the Triller Triad fight event, Frank Mir lost very badly. I think it was kind of like a boxing hybrid type thing. I don't even know. Matt Mitrione was on this card and lost. And again, the aforementioned Mike Perry pick up a win. And then Kevin Lee was released. He was a guy I think that a lot of people thought might be have a championship aspirations or could be a UFC champion at some point. Kind of everyone thought that, you know, after a while, the 165 pounds would be the best division, of course, for him, kind of a hybrid. UFC had no interest in doing that, and he was ultimately released, and we'll talk about more about where he landed in just a minute. Thoughts about the month of November?
Yeah, the Kevin Lee thing took me off guard, but I guess given his record and probably the kind of money he makes, we shouldn't be surprised because guys at that level, you know, tend to get cut when they lose a few fights. Another guy that we just talked about, I guess we'll save it for when we actually talk about it, but we know where he's landing, at least in the short term. I didn't even know Mike Perry was on that Triller card.
And, I didn't either.
It's kind of funny. I knew about Mir and Mitrione. Kind of a bad year for Mitrione. Max Holloway, you said, you know, talking about a trilogy with Alexander Volkov. I mean, he's my favorite fighter, so I'm going to be down for that. And I think, you know, I thought he beat him in the second fight, and even the first fight was kind of close. So I definitely want to see that again, but Max Holloway, in his post-fight interview, he, you know, kind of wanted to get in on the Conor sweepstakes as well. And they, of course, had a fight very, very early in both their careers where Conor won by decision, on the undercard of, I think, a show in, like, somewhere in Europe. It was maybe Conor's first fight in UFC. A long, long time ago. So that, you know, is something that I'm sure would have some interest. And I'm not sure Conor would actually even want to take that fight. Not much else. Yeah. Patricky Pitbull, winning the light heavyweight title was, I don't know, kind of a joke. Peter Queeley is, you'd call a regional, fighter in Europe that probably, you know, would not be a title contender by any stretch. And this seemed to be just a way of Patricio Pitbull just kind of handing the title over to his brother, which whatever, it's Bellator. You know, nobody cares really.
It's crazy that with so many talented lightweights in the world, that their division is kind of like, yeah. I mean, I was putting this in here and like, I could not pick up Peter Queeley out of a lineup. I kept thinking like Peter McNeely instead, the old Tyson Foyle for when he got out of prison. But it's crazy that, you know, again, there's only one championship in UFC, lightweight championship, right? And that the opportunity there, and I guess the money for some, we talk about money, but they still have not got the point where people are like, look, I'm going to go Bellator and I'm going to compete for a title instead of being like, you know, number 10 ranked lightweight in UFC or number 11 or something like that, right? It could be contractual. You know, a lot of guys may not be under, their contracts may not run out the right time, but we haven't really seen a big shift yet. And people just kind of waiting and waiting and waiting. And meanwhile, I have someone named Peter Queeley getting a shot at a title that's kind of like, as you mentioned, the Pitbull title, you know?
And I'm not even like Patricky Pitbull. I mean, he's an okay fighter, but, you know, he's lost a lot. And I'm not sure he's even a top 15 UFC guy, let alone Peter Queeley. Now, granted, UFC 155 is pretty stacked, but still. Dana White being interested in Khamzat and Nate, like I mean, obviously that'd be a big money fight and Khamzat would get a high profile win. If I'm Nate Diaz, I do not want any part of that fight, but you know, I don't know if he cares. It doesn't, you know, he had a fight with Leon Edwards and, you know, he got beat for 24 and a half minutes and came out of it as a bigger star. So I think no matter what Nate Diaz wins, it all comes up roses for him. So, like you said, not a ton happening. I mean, we had great fights, but other than that, not a ton of news.
Yeah. I think the reason that Dana White wanted to do that was the executioner style approach he likes to take with guys that are about to leave. And I think he was like, if Nate's going to leave anyway, I can at least get my pound of flesh on the way out. That's how I took that as. I don't think he thinks that it's going to be a competitive fight.
No, no, exactly. So, you know, and yeah, maybe that's what they're thinking is, you know, Nate Diaz goes out on a bad loss. And then, you know, if they want to re-sign him, it's cheaper. And if he wants to go somewhere else, his marketability is shot. And I think I've seen enough to know that that's neither one of those things probably would happen.
So let's round the bend, Paul. We're finally at December, which just concluded obviously a couple days ago and a few things happening even at the very end of the month. Headlined by UFC 290, that's not even right, 269. Boy, I am all messed up with these. Now I'm calling 269, 296. Unbelievable. Okay, so UFC 269. This was another fun show as well. And to your point, they had a really great run here, pay-per-views, and this was another good one. Charles Oliveira submitting Dustin Poirier in the main event to retain the lightweight championship and really kind of cementing himself as a force. If people didn't believe him at this point, I mean, he's got it all. He's amazing 2021. Really has been surging to get this point and then submitting Poirier, who a lot of people thought was going to win the title. But Charles Oliveira coming through. And then in a stunner in the co-main event, Juliana Pena submitting Amanda Nunes in, I believe, the second round or third round. I can't think of the top of my head. Submission victory to win the women's bantamweight title against Nunes, who had just been a dominant force in two divisions for so long. You know, there had been some talk leading up when the shows I listened to, Morning Combat, had talked about how, you know, this wasn't necessarily how it's dangerous to just say, okay, Nunes is going to win, let's not even think about it, that there were some things that Pena brought to the table that gave her a chance against Nunes, maybe not the best chance. But regardless, Juliana Pena picked up a big upset victory there. Dominic Cruz on the undercard, imagine that, outlasting Pedro Munhoz to pick up a nice unanimous decision victory. Tai Tuivasa, who you talked about in the last episode, knocking out Augusto Sakai. His star continues to grow. Chewy is all over the place. People love him. I think, to your point, last episode, he's going to have a pretty interesting and big 2022, especially if he can keep winning. Sean O'Malley, another guy who I think it's time to start kind of moving up the ladder a bit, picking up a knockout victory over Rulian Paeva. Dana White said initially before this that O'Malley was not ready for the higher up competition for some reason. And after this fight, saying, yeah, okay, he's ready for the higher up competition. I think it's time to start moving O'Malley up the ladder a bit. Maybe they have some hesitancy because he's been outspoken against the UFC and pretty much outspoken against everybody. But it's time. It's time to let the shine, star shine a little bit more. And Kai Kara France, I hate to bring this up, Paul, knocking out your guy, Cody Garbrandt. On this show. And after the part of the lead up to this, we had this strange dust up between Dominic Cruz and Daniel Cormier, with Cruz saying that Cormier didn't research properly for his color commentary duties. Kind of random how he brought this up. And Cormier kind of fired back and felt a little betrayed, I guess, by it. And he admitted that he has an assistant that helps him do some of the research and things like that, which some people thought was like this big deal, but it really isn't, because commentators do this in every big sport. They have research. The term research assistant, that position is for like research. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. So this is just kind of a weird aside. And then afterwards, a couple weeks later, Dana White claiming that Pena versus Nunes 2 will crush the pay-per-view numbers for Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm. Not so sure about that. I guess we'll see once we get there. But yeah, overall, 269, this was a fun show.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of people had this as a show of the year. You know, in the cage, I would say that it's hard to argue. I go with the one in April, you know, the first show in front of fans, just because I think the fact that it was the first show kind of puts it over the edge, and just that crowd was rabid, and it was great card as well. But, you know, just a series of great cards for UFC and, you know, and great pay-per-view. I think it was their biggest pay-per-view year in history, which is, you know, pretty incredible. You know, great. They're going to get like a huge increase on if they, you know, when they renegotiate the streaming rights next time. And people thought that ESPN overpaid when this deal was originally announced. I'll, you know, put my hand up. I was one of them. I didn't think there's any way they were going to make their money back, and they've more than done that. So, you know, everybody's winning. ESPN's making stars. UFC's rolling over in money. The fighters are unfortunately the ones that aren't getting, you know, trickled down to them, but maybe that'll change. You know, Sean O'Malley, you brought up one of the things I believe that happened after this card was that Dana White basically said, you know, it's time to start paying Sean O'Malley. So not only is he going to be getting bigger opponents, but they renegotiate his contract and he is getting more. So, you know, I think they look at him as a bigger star. I'm not going to pretend that I thought that Julia Pena had any chance of beating Amanda Nunes. She's like one of my least favorite fighters. I've been pretty vocal about that. And, you know, her post-fight interview, you know, where she's like cursing up a storm, holding her baby, like that was a wonderful look. She's not a classy person, but she can't take away from her that she beat, you know, somebody that, you know, most people considered, you know, definitely the best female fighter of all time and one of the best, you know, fighters of any gender of all time, you know, given, you know, her domination of opponents over the last, you know, several years, I think since she beat Cyborg, like that, which is like almost 5 years ago now. I think COVID maybe took a little bit out of Nunez, but, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Pena. I was watching this, with the volume off because I was recording a podcast at the time. And, so I was like, I couldn't even figure out what happened. Like I'm watching this and the way that, you know, she got her down and she got the choke in and then all of a sudden it was over. And I was like, did the round end? Did, you know, like, and then it's like, no, she tapped. And I'm like, I didn't see the timer and, I was just stunned. And I think the crowd was stunned too. I watched it later, you know, with the commentary on and, it was just kind of, you know, she just wore it down. And then as soon as she got that choke in, like Nunez just tapped. Cause you know, I guess she just knew she was done. The Oliveira, Poirier main event was incredible. It wasn't like a fight of the year, but that was just because there were so many great fights, but it was, you know, cemented Charles Oliveira as the top lightweight in, you know, like I mentioned earlier, a very stacked division. And, you know, it's pretty incredible given, you know, how long he's been around. And he had a stretch where he had lost like three or four in a row. And like, if he had lost another one, he could have got cut. And then he just went on this incredible run that he's still on. I think he's won like 11 in a row or something. And most of them have been by finish.
Yeah.
And he's got the most finishes in UFC history. He's got the most submissions in UFC history, most performance bonuses in UFC history. Like, you know, he is definitely a Hall of Famer and really like, you know, close to being an all-time, you know, great lightweight. If he defends a title a couple times, like, you know, you're going to be putting him in that conversation. And I think Oliveira Makhachev is a fight that I'm really, really looking forward to at some point. But I think he's got to get through some of these bigger names first before they get to that fight.
Yeah. And I think if he does, that will be his interesting. You read off that list of accomplishments and in cages, it's unparalleled, right? But he hasn't really like translated over into a mainstream star with those type of, you know, finish rates and things like that. And in terms of like maybe the MMA fan base, I think the hardcores appreciate him, but
yeah,
he hasn't come off as like must see yet, if that makes sense. And I think it's going to take another few high profile fights, like a Gaethje fight and things like, I think that's what it's going to take maybe to put him over the top. So I'm very interested to see his outlook for 2022.
He's, you know, this was a great start because Poirier is a big name, you know, coming off the two Conor wins. And this show, I don't think you mentioned it, it did incredible numbers. I think it's looking at like something like 850,000, which, you know, so he, you know, Oliveira getting the main event on a big show like that, you know, is, you know, goes a long way. Oh, and one other thing I want to talk about there was the Pena, you know, Dana White claiming that Pena Nunez 2 will crush Ronda Holm pay-per-view numbers. I'm not even 100% positive that would even headline a pay-per-view. I mean, I suppose it probably will, and it may be the only women's fight that they would make right now that would headline a pay-per-view, but to claim that it's going to, you know, break a million buys is just ridiculous. Yeah. I had someone DM me right after this fight saying, oh, you know, Nunez is going to make more money for the rematch with Pena than she made for the fight with Ronda. And I'm like, are you nuts? Is this like Dana White's burner account? Like, there's no way. Like, I, you know, I'm sorry, you know, it's going to do really well. And, you know, and then, you know, if Pena wins, there's a really big fight coming up with Kayla Harrison, who we didn't mention, but she was at cage side. And I think the idea was that Pena was going to destroy Nunez was going to destroy Pena, and then, you know, square off with Harrison, and they're going to book a big fight for 2022. But, you know, that's probably going to have to wait now.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, Ryan Frederick retweeted or tweeted this GIF, and you can see like them panning cage side after ringside afterward, and it was just like you saw her just turn her back, you know, and you could just tell she didn't want her facial expression to be caught on camera because she knew that she had just lost at least a temporary delay of a lot of money.
Yeah, but, yeah, lottery, but, like me losing that lottery ticket in Vegas. I've told that story, but yeah.
Exactly. Okay, let's go through the first part of the month here. Jan Blachowicz coming off his light heavyweight title loss. Tap for a March main event against Alexander Rakic. Dana White and his family testing positive for the coronavirus, all of them. And there was a big dust up, of course, here because everything is political and everything has a side because he aligned with Joe Rogan and immediately called him and all this stuff. And he actually got the coronavirus while he was in Maine, my home state. Imagine that. Felicia Spencer and Claudia Gadelha both retired. And I put Felicia Spencer in here because she had just challenged for the featherweight title two years prior, something like that. I can't remember. And retiring at a very early age. And then Gadelha just retiring after, pretty tough run. She'd had been in some entertaining fights and was just ready to call it quits. John Jones being very mature about the Jackson wink split with that gym, saying that, you know, Greg Jackson was going to keep reporting or mentioning things or get something. If he's going to keep talking on social media, he was going to reveal all types of juicy details about the gym and things like that. So very mature, John Jones, very mature. Speaking of maturity, he accepted a plea deal with Las Vegas police or the Las Vegas district attorney's office, rather. And the domestic violence charges against it were dropped. He had to pay $750 for that whole debacle the night of. And yeah, I've talked about this before, just not a good person, not a good situation there with John Jones. Bellator 272, Sergio Pettis stunned Kyuji Horiguchi with a spinning back fist to retain his bantamweight title in a very entertaining end to that fight. Sean Strickland versus Jack Hermanson was tapped for a February main event for UFC. Bellator at the same Pettis Horiguchi event announced that they're going to do a 8-man, 135-pound Grand Prix with a $1 million prize to the winner. UFC Vegas 44 results. Jose Aldo, again, turning back time, keeping on going, outclassing Rob Font, picking up a nice decision win there. Rafael Fiziev knocking out Brad Riddell in a fight of upcoming contenders. And we mentioned Jim Miller. I put this in there. Clay Guida picking up a submission win over a black belt on the undercard. He's still keeping going on. I know those two fought again. Maybe that'll be the fight to make at UFC 300. Who knows? Tyron Woodley back for more cash, back for the Jake Paul rematch and got flattened. As a result, I haven't seen the fight, but was told it was a very, very boring fight early on. And then I think about halfway through is when Woodley just got caught and just face first in the canvas. So, yeah, there's Tyron Woodley for you there. Rashad Evans and Bigfoot Silva versus Tyrone Spong. Both set for Khabib's Eagle Fighting Championship, I think U.S. debut. Henan Barrow, talk about this must be like washed fight league. Henan Barrow, former UFC Bantamweight champion, returning on that show. Kevin Lee, we just mentioned, signed, and as a Khabib announcer, are going to do 165-pound division, so we'll see what happens there. And there's also some talk about Diego Sanchez potentially signing with Eagle FC as well. Bellator announced a heavyweight title unification bout between Ryan Bader and Valentin Moldavsky at Bellator 273. And there was a story about UFC fighters and coaches being forced to pay for their own COVID tests. There was a report by Errol Hawani. The next day, UFC said that was not true. And they issued a thing that, you know, fighters would and coaches would have to could get reimbursed for any tests that they had beforehand. And the reason they did it was blah, blah, blah. So kind of a he said, she said situation there. Thoughts about any of that, Paul?
A lot there, actually. Yeah. So, yeah, Jan Blachowicz and Alexander Rakic. I was kind of hoping that it was going to be Yuri Prochazka, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on. We haven't seen him since May. I don't know if maybe he's got an injury or something. I'm sure that's probably something like that I just wasn't aware of. The Dana White thing popping for Rona, I thought it was funny. Like when, you know, the first person he calls is Joe Rogan, and I made the joke like that it sounded like an SNL skit. That, you know, like playing out on in real life.
Yeah.
Claudia Gadelha retiring was interesting because she was actually she was in the very first strawweight fight in UFC history. If you recall, it was either right before or even maybe during the Ultimate Fighter season where they had the straw weights on, and basically her and Joanna and Paige VanZant just, they didn't go in that series, and they, any one of them probably would have won it. So she fought that, and then she had that nice series with Joanna, and and then just kind of fell in tough times the last few years. The Sergio Pettis, you know, we don't talk, you know, I kind of make fun of Bellator a lot, but that was actually the Pettis Horiguchi fight was one of the best knockouts of the year in any company, because Horiguchi was dominating for the first four rounds, and Pettis needed a miracle. And he got it in the fifth round with the spinning back fist. It was pretty cool, out of nowhere. Like, you know, just and he, you know, just looked like he was going to lose 50-45, and he just, you know, he knocked him out with, you know, halfway through the fifth round. The Eagle FC. So you kind of put in here Kevin Lee Sainz and then Sanchez with a question mark. And I could have sworn I'd heard that Kevin Lee was fighting Diego Sanchez at 165, but I pulled up the card and it's not on there. So I don't know if maybe that was just a rumor.
Yeah. So I think what had happened was Khabib had posted something on Twitter and then then deleted it. So I think that's where that initially came from. Yeah.
Gotcha. So, but he is, that card, though, like you said, the washed up fight league. I mean, you got Hannah Burrell in there. You got Sugar Rashad Evans fighting Gabriel Checo. Ray Borg, you know, longtime UFC flyweight, is fighting on the card. And then Tyrone Spong. The Bigfoot fight's already off, but they found somebody. They found Sergey Karatonov. I guess he hasn't lost enough in Bellator. He's going to fight on this fight. Tyrone Spong, you know, 2-0, but, you know, probably better known as a boxer, really. I mean, maybe he's done a little bit of kickboxing too, but he's 2-0, hasn't fought in MMA in a long, long time. 2012, I think, at the first World Series show. Yeah, World Series of Fighting.
He's one of those guys that he has the look and he has the knockout power, but he just has never like been like a consistent force at any martial art. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he hasn't fought in 10 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of hard to be consistent when you're not fighting.
True.
John Howard is fighting on the card. Mm. You probably remember him.
I do. I've talked to him a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doomsday.
New England guy. It's five cards. So this is going to be, I believe, like it's on something called Flixcast, but I think the idea is that this is basically, it's eventually going to be a feeder system for UFC, and it's Khabib Nurmagomedov is the guy that's behind it, and so he's bringing in big names and probably mixing in prospects, although in this case I don't see any prospects. Ramazan Kurmagomedov is 9-0, so I assume he's a prospect, but that's kind of being an interesting promotion to look at. And I mean, of any of these regional promotions, like that's the kind of one I'm probably going to watch. Like, you know, hey, I'm going to see Sugar Rashad. I'm going to see Tyrone Spong. Like, yeah, you know, Hennen Burrell, you know, maybe getting beat by somebody I never heard of. That's kind of cool. Cause I don't think Hennen Burrell's winning anytime soon. No. So yeah, that could be a lot of fun. We're going to finally see Ryan Bader defend his heavyweight title after, you know, being in the light heavyweight Grand Prix for the last year against Valentin Moldovsky in a main event in any arena in the country.
That's right. Yeah. With Gorilla Monsoon back in the day. All right.
Mean Gene.
That's right. Let's go. Let's finish this off, Paul. Finish off strong here. Yeah. Dana White. Great way to finish it off. Quote unquote, have we ever lied about making a fight? He actually said that. He was talking about, there was some talk about the Adesanya Whitaker fight maybe not being official. So that was his retort to that. And then we mentioned Nate Diaz UFC. It was learned by reported by Ariel Hawaii that they extended the Nate Diaz contract because apparently he may have turned down the Chimaev fight, or they used that as the impetus to extend his deal. Because again, they can do that if a fighter turns down a fight or turns out they have to offer three fights a year, I think, for the most part, and then they can use that to extend a contract, which is absolutely ridiculous. But I think that the way that I read that, the Diaz wasn't too upset about that because they were kind of holding out to see what Conor McGregor does next, and they maybe were looking at that as a final cash out. Gegard Mousasi versus Mr. PVZ, Austin Bannerford. Bellator title fight was set for Ireland in February. There was some reports from Combate. The UFC was returning to Brazil in May for a pay-per-view. UFC Vegas 45, Derek Lewis becoming the record holder for the most knockouts in UFC history. I believe 12.
Wow.
Knocking out Chris Daukaus. in the main event of that show. And then Bilal Muhammad going to a decision with former title challenger Stephen Wonderboy Thompson in the co-main event. Chael Sonnen got 5 misdemeanors for a battery in a Las Vegas hotel skirmish. Kind of just a strange situation there. It appears that Rose Namajunas versus Carla Esparza 2 for the strawweight title is going to be a go in early 2022. Dana White says that Nick Diaz shouldn't fight again, but however, he still won't release him. Kind of odd how that happens. Junior Dos Santos all over this show, Paul, making his Thriller Combat debut in boxing in early 2022. BJ Penn said he would come back for one more fight if Hulk Hogan would walk him out. I had to include that one in there. Takanori Gomi, again, everything old is new again, came back for a Ryzen New Year's Eve fight against Tenshin. Tenshin was a kickboxer that fought Floyd Mayweather 2020, I believe that was. It could have been, I think it was 2020, in a short notice fight. More Dana White, Jake Paul drama. This happened throughout the entire month, kind of blew up again over the very end of the year with Dana White saying he would steroid. What did he say? I will cocaine test for 10 years if I can steroid test Jake Paul for 2. And Jake Paul essentially saying he would gladly sign with the UFC. He would retire from boxing, sign for the UFC tomorrow if the UFC would pay fighters, 50% of purse and 50% of revenues and all this type of stuff. He said he would do it. So again, this is going to be something that does not go away. And Jake Paul, God bless him, pounding the drum for UFC fighter pay and actually seems to be getting an audience for it. Kind of interesting how that thing is playing out. And then finally, Paul, UFC put a cap on this, does record revenue numbers for the year, pay-per-view buys, revenue, everything is up. They've made it through the Rona, as you mentioned, selling out pay-per-view houses left and right, keeping expenses down, running shows in Vegas, and everything is coming up Millhouse for Simpsons fans. And Dana White claiming that their fan base is up 40%. I don't know how you can corroborate that, but whatever. UFC having another great 2021 at the box office. The same issues they've closed 2020 still remain as we close 2021. Paul, thoughts on any and all of that?
Well, I mean, the last one is interesting because it's, hashtag Dana says a lot of things, but I honestly, he might be right in the 40% up because, with all the people that are buying pay-per-views and with all the people that are subscribed to UFC Fight Pass and ESPN Plus, I mean, we don't get the ESPN Plus streaming numbers, but we do see, the ESPN numbers, and those are kind of down. But we don't know how many people are watching on ESPN Plus. And most people that I talk to that live in the States, they just watch the shows on ESPN Plus because it's so much easier. You don't have to flip back and forth between channels. And you don't know 1 week to the next if it's going to be on ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News. But you do know that they're all going to be on ESPN Plus. So most fight fans are just going to, flip on ESPN Plus on a Saturday and there's fights. So it's possible that what he's telling is right. BJ Penn, that's kind of funny because we just talked about Eagle FC in the last thing, and they're in Florida, and we all know that that's where Hulk Hogan hangs out. So, hey, why not? I'm sure Khabib could pay BJ some money and get him to fight some lightweight that nobody's ever heard of, or welterweight. I don't know how big BJ is these days.
Light heavyweight?
Well, he fought at heavyweight, famously. He's the guy that
Lyoto Machida rematch.
Yeah, he's the guy that whenever you want to play your MMA math game, he's the guy that gets you to Demetrius Johnson beating Cain Velasquez. Mr. Van Zandt getting the title shot, I thought was funny. I mean, he is 11-0, but I don't think anybody is, even pretending that he's not getting this fight just because Paige will be in his corner. UFC returning to Brazil in May. That's interesting because, Brazil has been really hard hit with Corona, but, that's been a really great market for UFC. And the fights I've, kind of heard rumored for that would be, Glover Teixeira's first title defense. The Nunez Pena would be on that show. So that, you know, that timing kind of works. That's what, a little over four months from now. So that, I mean, I love those Brazil shows. So hopefully that, you know, that's able to happen. Hopefully we're closer to the end of this than we are to the beginning. God, it's been almost 2 years now. So,
I know.
Yeah. And, you know, this Omicron thing seems to be moving pretty fast. So, you know, who knows, you know, I've heard people think that, you know, it's like 6 weeks from now, you know, we might be really, you know, things might be looking a lot better. So, you know, knock on wood, hopefully they're right.
That's right. That's right. Well, yeah. We come to a close of our 2021 review series, Paul. Yeah. It is, as we've mentioned throughout the series, it has been a great year for fighting, I would say, overall. I think from top to bottom, quality of cards and availability of cards and even stuff outside the UFC, the quality's there. I think, you know, fighters are more trained, better trained than ever before. There's a lot of opportunities and things like that. But, you know, there's still the beat still goes on for some of the issues within the sport in terms of UFC with fighter pay, them getting their fair share, you know, them not having certain rights in you know, video games, and just, you know, a lot of those things still remain the same, but they still, again, the drum just keeps beating and they keep putting on pay-per-views that a ton of people watch. And I think it'll be a trend that continues throughout next year. The things I'm interested in, you know, kind of the bigger stuff is, are they going to keep staying in the apex? That seems to be, to me, probably something they're going to do for the foreseeable future. When can they start going to, again, you mentioned places like Brazil, does that end up happening? Are there other places they have not been to in a while that they're going to go back to, especially looking at the summer? And to keep on that trend of monthly pay-per-views that sell out and not just running, you know, Florida, Texas, Vegas all the time, but going to some other markets and trying to get some people starved for some live entertainment, you know, where can they go to next and keep that running? And is that the model going forward? You know, maybe select fight nights go outside the apex, but I think they have a good thing going there. And they're going to try to keep that rolling as much as possible. For Bellator, it's just a question of how can they try to make an impact? And I think with, I don't think they're going to go out of business or anything like that, but you know, I don't take it for granted that organizations anymore are just going to stay put no matter what. I think I look at things like Ring of Honor and pro wrestling, and I think that was kind of a reminder to me that nothing is a guarantee. Now, UFC is not going to go out of business anytime soon. WWE is not going to go out of business anytime soon, but you know, if for some reason Viacom has some issues, you know, do they reassess how they do Bellator? Is it making enough an impact for them? You've talked about viewership on Showtime and things like that. Is the juice worth the financial squeeze? I think that's something to kind of keep in the back of our minds as we look through 2022. And yeah, it's always going to be interesting. You know, is McGregor going to come back this year? John Jones, what's happening there? Francis Ngannou, his contract situation is fascinating as well, as he comes up in this Cyril Gane title unification bout. And yeah, it's just the drama throughout the sport never stops, but it's so those are a few things I'm interested in for this year ahead.
Yeah, I think like the last I'd heard that UFC was planning on running at the Apex until mid-March, and then they're going to be doing a fight night in London if everything goes according to plan. And then at that point, coming back, they're going to start doing those shows, you know, in other assorted US markets and maybe some international, but that was before Omicron. So I don't know if anything's changed since then. Like, nothing's been officially booked.
Yeah.
Other than I think they may have a hold on a building in London. And you know, and they're starting to look at some fights, but nothing has been booked for that. So, I know there was a talk of a Darren Till fight headlining that show, but again, you know, that's very preliminary because we're still, you know, at least a little over 2 months out. But yeah, I mean, at some point they're going to have to go back to touring. And I think that the idea is, you know, that Apex they're going to use for, you know, the Ultimate Fighter, for Dana White Contender Series, and maybe even some other combat sports, you know, and then, you know, maybe do the odd fight night from there, maybe during like a International Fight Week or some of the big Vegas pay-per-views. Maybe you do it, you piggyback an extra show on that same week or the week before or the week after. So, yeah, that's something that very interesting to look at. And like you said, you know, some of these minor promotions like Bellator, PFL, Combate, like they're going to be around as long as their broadcast partners want them to be. And right now, like PFL, for instance, is they don't even have a deal right now for 2022. So they got a lot of fighters in their contract, but they don't really have anywhere where these fights are going to be broadcast. I think the ESPN deal's up and they're renegotiating. So obviously, you know, if ESPN was happy with the numbers, they would have signed them already. So that may be telling. And Bellator, I mean, they're owned by Viacom. So that, you know, is why they're still there. But, you know, like you said, with Ring of Honor, you know, if they decide that they don't want to do it anymore. And I don't know what's going on with Ring of Honor, but I haven't seen a TV show in a couple of weeks. So I thought I heard they were going to be doing Best Of or something, but I haven't seen them. So I don't know if it's just the Canadian broadcaster isn't airing it. But, you know, if that happens with Bellator, I mean, they're done. Like, you know, because they're, you know, there's no way that, you know, if Viacom's not giving them the broadcast platform, like there's no reason for them to even exist. Yeah. I mean, they have the international TV deals, but they're not paying these bills. And some of these guys come with pretty high tickets. So that is something definitely to keep an eye on, because I think there's a very big audience for MMA. But in the eyes of the fans, MMA is UFC. You know, and for the longest time, you know, pro wrestling was WWE, but now there's a competitor. But the difference is that there was a lot of disgruntled fans that weren't happy with the product that WWE is presenting. And that is definitely not the case with UFC.
Correct.
Some people are mad at how they treat the fighters, but they're not mad enough that they don't buy these shows. And the shows are great. So unless they start putting on crap shows and, you know, main eventing pay-per-views with, you know, fights like, you know, Mark Munoz and Chris Lieben, you know, like we're getting like quality main events. We're getting great fights. We're getting shows every week that are just knocking out of the park. Like it's very rare you get a bad UFC show. So, you know, there's more than enough just with that one company to keep an MMA fan happy, because like even you, like, you know, you're a hardcore fan, you know, you've got a podcast and you don't even watch all the UFC shows, let alone all the minor shows. So
yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's more than enough to keep you happy with the one company. So,
yep, I agree. Yeah. I agree. Well, Paul, you're more than enough to keep me happy on these various shows throughout the years. And before I let you go, you can obviously read you on our website, WrestlingObserver.com, with all the ring stuff for pro wrestling. You can read you and hear you on Fight Game, Fight Game Media, Fight Game Podcast Network, In the Clinch, you and Ryan Frederick, who does the UFC recaps. For our website, you can watch you and hear you on Grandpa Dez, which is YouTube, and I'll be on a guest on at some point. I hope in January we'll make that happen. And what else? What else am I forgetting? You can also follow you on Paul Ace Fontaine on Twitter. And what else? What else?
Well, you can also interact with me on social media and if you want to join the Fight Game Media Network Facebook group. You know, we have a lot of discussions around pro wrestling, MMA, even a little boxing and pop culture. You know, the odd time, well, you know, real popular TV show or anything is going on, we'll talk about it. And it's just a lot of fun. A lot of people that you'll know in that thing if you're listening to this. If you like this series that I did with Josh, we had a kind of a mini version of it last week on In the Clinch, and it's available for free. So you can just find it on the Fight Game Media feed on all major podcast platforms. But we did a year in review of MMA with, you know, stuff like Knockout of the Year, Show of the Year, Fight of the Year, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was with Ryan Frederick last week. So that's the most recent episode of In the Clinch that's gone up. And then this week we're doing like kind of a fun, like a draft. So we're going to be drafting fighters in different weight classes and stuff, just, you know, just kind of for fun. If we're starting our own MMA promotion kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And and the Grandpa Dez show is, I got a lot of really cool guests lined up for January, including Josh, hopefully, and some other people. I don't want to jinx it by naming, but if you follow the Grandpa Dez YouTube channel, you'll get a notification for the new shows. They drop 3 times a week. But yeah, there's some good stuff already up there. Brian Alvarez, Oliver Kopp, probably the two most popular shows so far. I've had Filthy Tom Lawler, Promise Thomas. Lance Storm was on the Christmas Eve show. So, yeah, you can check that out, and it's free on YouTube, Grandpa Dez.
All right, Paul. Well, thanks so much for being part of the series, as always. And we'll talk to you before 12 months. we'll talk to you again. We resume the series later on this year.
Yeah, hopefully later this month we'll talk.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, what am I thinking? Yeah, sounds good. Paul Fontaine, thanks so much. Say goodbye to 2021.
Adios.
All right. Big thanks to Paul Fontaine for stopping by, and thanks to all of you for listening. Obviously, I have a lot of choices in your podcast today, so I greatly appreciate the time spent with me and Paul throughout this entire series. Again, it's, you know, it's a labor of love for both of us, but you know, we can't take it for granted that, you know, people like to listen to this, and it's obviously time. It's Paul's time. It's my time. So, I thank him, for stepping in and being so available, and also, thank all for listening. And yeah, a lot of things happen in this course of a year. And the impetus for doing these is, you know, we're always looking forward, but you know, let's learn about history. So what we just happened, so we can better assess what happens going forward. And yeah, hope you enjoy that look ahead to 2022 and, you know, some of the big things that are happening on the horizon. Going to be an interesting year as always. Hopefully have a few new stars emerge and we'll, have the sport continue to be a lot of fun, in the months and years ahead. So I'm going to let you go, again. Thanks to all you. I have a lot of choices in your podcast day, so I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of our great podcast hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. Coming up Tuesday, it'll be the year in review December, pro wrestling. Finally, we're done. Pro Wrestling Year in Review is going to be a wrap coming out on Tuesday afternoon, I believe. And yeah, then the 16-episode quest will be done to review everything that happened in 2021. And I'm going to go on vacation for a couple of days and hopefully not get Omicron or Decepticon or whatever type of variant is out there. Until next time, be safe. Insert catchphrase here.